This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. There are now hundreds of people living on the streets around the intersection of Massachusetts Avenue and Melnea Cass Boulevard. Over the last few weeks, we have been bringing you news of the worsening crisis there. It's one rooted in substance use disorder and homelessness. Suffolk County Sheriff Steve Tompkins has been watching tents go up there with dismay and now has his own idea for how to address the humanitarian crisis. Renovate a now vacant section of the South Bay House of Corrections to house and treat people struggling with addiction and experiencing homelessness. And Suffolk County Sheriff Steve Tompkins is on the line now. Sheriff Tompkins, welcome back.
Ms. Deering, how are you today?
I'm well, thank you, and I appreciate you joining us. I wonder if I could ask you to start by just outlining what you're proposing, please, Sheriff Tompkins.
So in discussion with the individuals, the businesses in the Newmarket Square area, and some of the residents in the South End, we've been talking about ways in which we could be a part of the solution. And I just happen to have a facility on my campus that is now vacant for the most part. And so the thought is, let's find a way to get people off the street and get them into housing where they would have shelter, food, the medication that they need, showers, and the like. And we just think it's a smart idea to get people in a confined space when the winter is coming, and it's going to get incredibly cold here. And so we've begun discussions with the state and the city, as well as some of the community businesses and residents, to talk about whether or not this is a viable idea, a viable option. And to this point, most people think that it is a good idea.
So I think the sticky wicket, if I understand it, Sheriff Tompkins, is the question of whether one would go voluntarily or not. And as I understand it, this could be an involuntary commitment.
No, that's not necessarily the case. What we're looking at right now, because of Section 35, and I'm not sure what your audience knows about Section 35, but simply put, that's a civil commitment. We are looking at individuals that already have outstanding warrants, and so they are engaged with the legal system in some capacity. The question is to what degree, whether it's something that's major or something that's minor. And if we begin in that way, I think we get around the civil commit portion of this right now, but there also are a lot of people out there that do not have any engagement with the legal system that also need the help that we can provide. So that's going to be meted out by the courts and by the district attorney as to who could come here. And once that is figured out, then we will work with that population and get them the necessary things, that the resources that they need so that they can work to get clean and sober.
So this is a real opportunity to comb this out a little bit more, Sheriff Tompkins, especially because, as you say, many of our listeners may not understand this. So I'm going to feed back to you what I think I just heard. So you're saying wave one, my words, not yours, would be people who were already in some way touching or engaged in the criminal justice system. And those would be people that you would be seeking to move into this excess capacity at South Bay. So part one, am I understanding you correctly?
Correct.
Okay. And then part two, people may or may not know that there is a process called Section 35 that families can go through with a court to essentially have somebody involuntarily committed for substance use treatment if they are a danger to themselves or others. And you're leaving that door open as a possible second path in, but it is not the first thing for which you're suggesting or advocating. Do I understand you again?
That is correct.
Okay. So how many people are we talking about, Sheriff Tompkins? You have said there's capacity for up to 100 beds. Are you talking about 100 people at a time?
Yes, actually.
And
yes.
Do you feel like, because again, understanding this real time with you as we go along, do you feel like there are enough people who are now present in that neighborhood who are engaged with the criminal justice system or have outstanding warrants, et cetera, that you could fill 100 beds at South Bay?
The aim here is to get as many people in a secure setting where we can help them, whether that's 25, 50, 75, or 100. What I'm saying is I have a max capacity of 100.
Okay.
And so if it's 25, okay, I'm good with that also. The thing here is that we need to get people in a position where they can get the help that they need to get back up on their feet. Or in some cases, people may come in and we just need to do an assessment, and their family members can then say, hey, you know, I've got a space for them. I'd rather them be at home than to be in your facility. And so what I'm saying is we have a max of 100.
So let's stay in the how would this work space a little bit longer, Sheriff Tompkins. Mm-hmm. These are folks who will have complex, potentially complex medical needs, certainly complex social intervention needs. Are you talking about the sheriff's office running this? And two, if so, you know, forgive me for being skeptical that our law enforcement as the opening orientation has the capacity to address in an environment like that all the complex needs that somebody who's maybe at the intersection of substance abuse disorder, substance use disorder, and homelessness may have.
Well, there's a couple of things there. First and foremost, when you go to a facility like ours, the state really becomes your primary healthcare practitioner. So on my site, in my facility, I have a full-blown mental health unit, I have a full-blown substance abuse team. This is what we do. And because of what's going on outside of our walls, the scarcity of beds to service people with either mental health challenges or substance abuse issues, if they do something that's untoward, they oftentimes wind up here anyway, you see. And what we really need, and I've talked to legislators about this endlessly, is that more money needs to be put out there so that you have beds out there, out in the community, not in a facility like mine. But because there aren't that many beds that can do that, to service that, all we're saying is this is one way that we can address this situation, and it could be a very short-term situation for several individuals or a lot of individuals, but let's begin the process of getting them the help that they need. The second part of your question about law enforcement. Law enforcement really is here to serve, to protect, and to serve. And I do believe when I talk to law enforcement professionals, they are very concerned about what's going on in the streets. Right now, right around my facility, you have an open-air drug market. You have the drug trade that's being done every day. I mean, when I drove in this morning, I actually witnessed three people shooting up. You have an element of human trafficking happening now. This past weekend, one of the tents caught on fire, and that happened again this afternoon. And so we've got a situation that's getting really, 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 really bad. So this is a conversation. Just let me finish this up, please. This is a conversation that's being had with a number of entities, state, local, police, caseworkers, sheriff's department, community residents, and businesses.
So as you're having this conversation with multiple entities, I'm sure many of them are aware, and I'm sure it's in the back of your mind, that there have been a number of deaths in our carceral system, including Aisha Johnson at South Bay a couple months ago. She was admitted on a Section 35. Are you receiving any pushback from this idea, given, you know, Suffolk County DA is investigating that death? There are three others that have come into question. Are you receiving any pushback about capacity, given those recent events?
No, but let me explain this to you. And this is what people don't understand. So they say that there's been three or four deaths in our facility in the last 6 weeks, 8 weeks. What people don't understand is this. Three of the four people were with us for less than 48 hours. We are receiving people here that have some serious, serious medical issues. And so what we do when you come in and you're under our jurisdiction, we immediately give you a physical. We immediately find out what your medical situation is. And two of the three people, I believe, and don't quote me on this, I'd have to check with our medical department, actually expired in our medical unit. When they came in and we found out what their medical needs were, we did not send them to the general population. We sent them to the infirmary where they passed away. Now, let me just say this to you about the Section 35s. We are, meaning the sheriff's departments, we are kind of the ferry system for the courts. We are mandated by the legislators to move people from the courts to either a correction facility or wherever they're going to go if they're looking for help or going to receive help. And so the young lady that you mentioned, although she falls under the heading of Section 35, she was here principally waiting for a ride to go to another facility.
So
here's what happens when you come in with the Section 35. Because of the Section 35 laws, we cannot give them a medical. We cannot give them a medical physical because of Section 35. And so she was sitting in our booking area waiting for the bus to leave to take her to where she was going. Let me also tell you this.
So, no, actually, I want to stop you there, and I appreciate you giving me that information. But also, Sheriff, I know you're exasperated with me. Stay with me on this because this is how we dig this out, right? So if you're not able to do that, if you're not authorized with the Section 35, for example, mm-hmm. doesn't that underscore potential vulnerability of somebody who might come into the system and be in withdrawal or in need of immediate substance use treatment? Do you have the ability, the authorization, and the capacity to provide that kind of urgent, immediate care if that is the need?
Yes,
when someone comes
in. Yes, we have it. No, we can't because of the Section 35 law. Yes, we can do it, but no, we can't do it.
But in what you're proposing, can you do it? In what you're proposing here at Mass and Cass with this new capacity, would you be able to do that?
And that's why we're looking at people with warrants, so that, yes, they come in and we can give them the help that they need immediately.
That's really helpful clarification. So then I have one last question for you.
But there's one last thing I've got to say before you go there.
Okay.
So what families have called us to say, we want information about our family members that have expired. Here's how they get that information. Because of HIPAA laws, I cannot, once again, give them that information. But what they can do is they can petition the courts to have the courts make them the representatives of their family member. Once that's done, then they can go to the medical examiner and get the information that they seek. I can't do it, but the medical examiner can do it once the courts have given those individuals the right to do that. And that's crucially important to know.
And I suspect that over time, as this issue gets played out, we're gonna look more and more at these processes. Before I let you go, I guess my last question to you, you and I have talked in a number of venues over the years. I'm aware of how aware you are. Has something gone seriously wrong that you are having to propose this as an option? Like, is this a last resort that you wish you didn't have to propose, but we're not getting it done in other ways?
You know, for America to be as vibrant it is, as wealthy as it is, for us to have the overwhelming number of homelessness, people suffering from homelessness, mental health, and substance abuse issues that we are not taking care of. This is not just germane to Massachusetts or Boston. This is across the country. So as a country, we really have to figure out how we want to prioritize the dollars that are being spent in that whole healthcare arena. In other words, we need to get in front of the curve where the cost won't be as much to help people versus behind the curve where it's incrementally more expensive to do. And that it really does infuriate me that we are here where we're at right now because of the fact that we are not addressing this mental health, substance abuse, and homelessness situation in a way that makes sense. So is this the last resort? More than likely it is, but it's an option. And so what we're saying is this is an option. Let's begin the conversation and let's see how we can make this work. Or if there are others outside of a correction facility that can do it, fine, then go for it. We are wide open to that, but we want the discussion to begin in earnest, and let's begin to really help people, get them off the street, and get them the care that they need.
That is Suffolk County Sheriff Steve Tompkins. Sheriff, really appreciate your time. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Listening in on that conversation was WBUR's Deborah Becker, who has been covering the Mass and Cass situation extensively. Deb, welcome back.
Thank you.
So a lot there, Deb. I just want to sort of let you go in reacting to what you just heard.
Well, I think that Sheriff Tompkins makes a point that there needs to be action taken in that area and deal with some of the problems, the continuing problems that we see there. But I think what I heard is Section 35 under a different name, but it's still Section 35. And while the sheriff said that folks who would be taken to his vacant facility under his plan would be those with outstanding warrants, so they would have some involvement in the criminal justice system, others who did not not have that involvement in the criminal justice system would still go to the facility, but that would be up to police and the district attorney, which, of course, is Section 35. You are involuntarily committing people to a treatment facility under the state law, but you are putting them in a correctional facility even though no crime has been committed. So I think that's the key part of this plan, and that's the part that is resulting in a lot of debate.
So, Deb, Section 35, I mean, there was one lawsuit about how Section 35 is executed for women in the Commonwealth. Policy was changed as a result. There's another lawsuit about how Section 35 is executed for men. I'm sorry, that's probably not the right word, but you understand what I'm saying. Any clarification for us there? And what do you want to tell us about what prisoner advocates are saying about Tompkins' plan?
Right. So prisoners' advocates filed suit about putting people in correctional facilities when they're involuntarily committed to treatment and they haven't committed any crimes. And so that suit was resolved. One suit was resolved in 2016, but that suit only mentioned women. So the state now can no longer send women to correctional facilities if they're involuntarily committed to treatment. There's another suit that's pending involving men, which would result in the same thing, that the state would be barred from using correctional facilities for men. And Bonnie Tenoriello is an attorney with Prisoners Legal Services of Massachusetts, and she's the one working on this lawsuit. And she says the bottom line to her is that correctional facilities are not places for treatment. Let's listen.
The stigma and shame that is conveyed by putting someone in correctional custody, those are completely contrary to treatment.
Tenoriello says instead the state should be putting resources into treatment and providing adequate services in a medical setting.
So, Deb, there were some things that the sheriff outlined in our conversation with him just now that was more detail than at least I had going into the conversation with him. One, were there any surprises for you in what the sheriff told us? And two, if there was any new information there, did you hear anything that might change the minds of those who are really concerned about his proposal?
I don't think so, because as I said, I think it's Section 35, but under a different name, and getting around some of the restrictions of the Section 35 law regarding providing medical treatment in correctional facilities to those who are involuntarily committed and dealing with those without standing warrants. So I think that it's the same debate, but it may not be under Section 35 specifically, which, as we said, is the subject of this litigation and does already have restrictions on it in the way the law is written.
So you heard at the end there when I asked him, is this a suggestion because other things have failed? And he basically said, somebody's got to do it. I'm trying to offer a solution here. The problems do seem to be getting worse there, Deb. You know, twice in the last couple of weeks, you've used the term deteriorating. I think I did too, right? So talk a little more about that.
Yeah, I mean, folks describe it as a humanitarian crisis, really. And it is, you know, it's very sad to be there, to see the tents and hundreds of people and people nodding off and people openly using illegal drugs and people really suffering. It's difficult. It's difficult to listen to area businesses who say, what am I supposed to do? I'm boarding up my windows. I'm putting up extra security. There's a mess everywhere and I can't keep up with the cleanup. And I think everyone recognizes that it's a problem. And actually today, during the legislative committee hearing on bills related to addiction, I was listening into that, and State Senator Julian Sear, who's chair of the Joint Committee on Mental Health Substance Use and Recovery, mentioned his recent visits to the Mass and Cass area. And this is what he said.
It is a pretty, honestly, I'm shocked that the city and the state have allowed it to get to that point. I think we need some pretty swift intervention.
So everyone keeps saying, intervene, do something, somebody do something. So Sheriff Tompkins, I think, is correct in saying something needs to change to address the issues in that area. But as you've talked about on the show, there are many proposals that have come forward and they haven't gone anywhere.
All right. So let's turn for just a minute to a different topic. We talked to you about it last week. You reported that the new ombudsman for the State Department of Corrections, still dealing with corrections, it was the first ombudsman, had been placed on paid administrative leave after WBUR asked about his background. I understand you've now learned that ombudsman Seth Peters was terminated by UMass Chan Medical School. What can you tell us?
Well, I think the medical school issued a brief statement this morning saying that Seth Peters is no longer employed by the school. The school had placed Peters on administrative leave last week after WBUR asked if he's the same Seth Peters who was involved in a 2012 wrongful death suit. That suit alleged that Peters, while working as a UMass EMT, falsified records about having a patient in cardiac arrest walk down three flights of stairs and the patient later died. So the school says it is now looking for an interim DOC ombudsman.
So you broke this, Deb, using publicly available resources. So what does that say about the vetting process that was used in the first place?
Well, I think it clearly raises questions about the vetting process, and lawmakers are asking about that. You could say that this suit was a long time ago, and perhaps folks didn't look too deeply into him. It appears that Mr. Peters has accomplished a lot since then. He was a public health officer in the Air National Guard, and he was working in epidemiology in Rhode Island and in Worcester.
So this is about overseeing how the pandemic is being managed in state prisons. Pretty important. What happens with the ombudsman post now?
Well, the school says it will look for someone else. It will look for an interim and then continue to search for a permanent ombudsman. Members of the legislature's Criminal Justice Reform Caucus wrote to UMass Medical School today, asking it to consider the candidacy of Dr. Monique Jimenez. She's an epidemiologist at the Harvard Chan School of Public Health. State Representative Mary Keefe and State Senator Jamie Eldridge said in the letter that it's urgent to get someone in that position. They say Dr. Jimenez was vetted by the state attorney general's office for the role and is eager to assume the position. And we should mention 21 prisoners in Massachusetts have died from the virus since the pandemic began, not including two men who were granted medical parole shortly before their deaths from COVID, so they were no longer considered in state custody.
All right, that's WBUR's Deb Becker. Deb, thanks.
You're welcome.